So we are reading today Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 26, Verse 9. Deva Utiruvacha Prakrite Purushasyapi Lakshanam Purushottama Bruhikaranayor Asya Sat Asach Cha Yat Atmakam. Translation. Devahuti said, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, kindly explain the characteristic of the Supreme Person and His energies, for both of those are the cause of the manifest and unmanifest creation. Purport. Prakriti, or material nature, is connected with both the Supreme Lord and the living entities, just as a woman is connected with her husband as a wife and with her children as mother. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that He impregnates mother nature with children, living entities, and thereafter all species of living entities become manifest. The relationship of all living entities with material nature has been explained. Now an understanding of the relationship between material nature and the Supreme Lord is sought by Devahuti. The product of the relationship is stated to be manifest and unmanifest material world. The product of that relationship is stated to be the manifest and unmanifest material world. The unmanifest material world is the subtle Mahatattva, and from that Mahatattva, the material manifestation has emerged. I just comment a little bit on that before we read further. So now Devahuti is asking the Supreme Personality of Godhead for more information about the relationship between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the material nature. And until now we were hearing the relationship between material nature and living entities. So we have three components, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, material nature, and living entities. So now Devahuti asks, what is about the relationship between the Supreme Lord and the material nature? And Srila Prabhupada gives this brilliant analogy of the father, the wife, and the children. Like the wife is like Prakriti, like this material nature. The father is the Purusha, the cause of all the causes, or Krishna, and the children are the living entities that come from the mother. In the Vedic literature, it is said that by the glance of the Supreme Lord, the total material energy is impregnated, and then everything is born of material nature. It is also confirmed in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that under His guidance, Adyakshena, under His direction and by His will, nature is working. It is not that nature works blindly. After understanding the position of the conditioned souls in relationship to material nature, Devahuti wanted to know how nature works under the direction of the Lord and what the relationship is between the material nature and the Lord. In other words, she wanted to learn the characteristic of the Supreme Lord in relation to the material nature. The relationship of the living entities with matter and that of the Supreme Lord with matter are certainly not on the same level, although the Mayavadis may interpret in this way. When it is said that the living entities are bewildered, the Mayavadis philosopher ascribed this bewilderment to the Supreme Lord, but that is not applicable. The Lord is never bewildered. That is the difference between the personality, between the personalist and impersonalists. Devahuti is not unintelligent. She has enough intelligence to understand that the living entities are not on the level of the Supreme Lord. because the living entities are infinitesimal, they become bewildered or conditioned by material nature. But this does not mean that the Supreme Lord is also conditioned or bewildered. The difference between the conditioned soul and the Lord is that the Lord is the Lord, the master of material nature, and he is therefore not subject to its control. He is controlled neither by material nature nor by material nature, or by spiritual nature nor by material nature. He is the supreme controller himself, and he cannot be compared to the ordinary living entities who are controlled by the laws of material nature. So I think it's quite clear. Huh? Here Prabhupada mentioned the difference between the Lord and the living entities, and again speak about the Mayavadis, who think that actually the Lord is also can also become bewildered. But Prabhupada make it clear that the Lord is beyond, and he's actually the supreme controller of both energy, spiritual energy and material energy. Two words used in this verse are Sat and Asat. The cosmic manifestation is Asat. It does not exist. But the material energy of the Supreme Lord is Sat, or ever-existing. Material nature is ever-existing in its subtle form as the energy of the Lord, but it sometimes manifests this non-existence or temporarily existence nature, the cosmos. An analogy may be made with the father and the mother. The mother and the father exist, but sometimes the mother begets children. Similarly, this cosmic manifestation, which comes from the unmanifested material nature of the Supreme Lord, sometimes appear and again disappear. But the material nature is ever existing. And the Lord is the supreme cause for both the subtle and gross manifestation in this world, in this material world. So we are still in this very technical, philosophical part. So I was thinking maybe to speak a little bit about this controlling attitude of the Supreme Lord, of the Lord being the supreme controller, and also what is our part, what is our control, what can we control? Because it's interesting to see here we have again the three components: Krishna, material nature, and living entities. And it seems that Krishna is the supreme controller, then material energy, and then the living entities are the lower. But in another place, we hear that actually the living entities are the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. And marginal energy is actually in between the material energy and the spiritual energy, and the living entity can actually choose if he wants to go toward the spiritual realm or toward the material realm. And the example is given of the of the sea or the beach. When the water comes to the beach, there is this place which is wet, which is not only earth, which is also water, but it's not only water, it's the between, in the tatashta area. And in that light, in that perspective, the living entities have some type of control over material nature. Like material nature is dull, is non-moving, but the living entity are moving, and like I can now control this microphone and do whatever I want with it. So it seems I have a certain control over the material energy. But very often, the material energy is actually over the living entity. The material energy through the three modes of material nature are actually the controller of the living entity. That's almost like an illusion that we can control material nature. And we see often we want to control, but then we become attached to this control, or we become attached to certain objects of material nature, and then because of this attachment grows, we become entangled, we become under the control of material nature. Sometimes the analogy is given of a person who go out with his dog, and he's thinking, I'm the master of the dog. But actually the dog is guiding him wherever he wants, and the dog stops whenever he wants, and the master has to wait. So it's actually the dog who is the master of the so-called master. We see also with computer, we can control it, but so often we are just drawn into it, and we just lose ourselves totally into the virtual world, and lose actually the control over what we wanted to do during the day, and lose a lot of time lost in the computer. So very often that's a fact. We have a certain control on material nature, but it's quite illusory, because most of the time it's actually material nature that is guiding us, and that is over us. So this tendency to control is all right, but as devotees or as practitioners in spiritual life, we should understand actually who is the supreme controller. We should never lose sight that Krishna is actually the supreme controller of both, of his internal energy and of the material energy, the three gunas. And if we keep in sight who is the supreme controller, then we are in safe ground. But if we just lose the sight of the supreme controller, then we become deeply binded in the material energy. This controlling attitude is so strong, and I think we all have our challenge of giving up the control and leaving the control to Krishna. And why is this control so strong over our activities? It's because we are attached to the result of the activities we are doing. Because of this attachment to enjoy a certain type of result, then we are very attached. We are controlling very much in order to reach this result. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, give up that result. Give up the fruits of your activities. Now, it's not an easy thing. Usually the only reason why we are acting is to get the result, is to enjoy the fruits. So now Lord Krishna is telling us, act, but give to... Actually, don't be attached to the result. Give up the result. But instead of just throwing the result away in the garbage can, like maybe we see in the Buddhist tradition, they do this big mandala and work and works hours, and then in the river, you just don't be attached to the result. But Krishna said, no, don't just waste the result of your activities, but just offer them to me. Offer those results to me. And why is it so? Why is the Lord asking us to be detached from the result of our activities? Because if you see logically, most of our frustration, they are coming because of unfulfilled expectations. We are hoping to get some types of result, and whenever those results do not come, we are just frustrated and we are suffering. But if we can be free, detached from whatever result come, then there is really no matter to be entangled. There is no matter to suffer anymore when we can free ourselves from the result of our actions. Therefore, Krishna said, give it up, but not just away, just give it to me. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever charity you do, whatever austerity you perform, just give it to me, just as a sacrifice, offer it to me, whatever you are doing. In Bhagavad Gita, in 4.22, Krishna is explaining that all living entities are parts and parcels of Krishna and are thus moved by the Supreme Lord. That means the Supreme Lord has the control and everything is actually under his guidance, under his power. And this is really the best situation in our Krishna conscious life, when we can see in that perspective, when we can allow the Lord to move us in the way he likes, when we can tune ourselves into the harmonious work of Krishna, and that we are not actually just trying to do our own things, our own plan, our own fulfillment of material desire, but in other words, to become instruments in the hands of Krishna and to be totally harmonized or tuned into what actually Krishna wants us to do. And this is miraculous when one can be rightly placed in the plans of the Lord, then life is so good, life is so happy. Everything is just at the time, everything is just arriving at the proper moment, you meet the proper persons, and this is very, very nice point. I will try to speak a little more on that for the end of the lecture. I was speaking with one devotee some years ago, and he was telling me one of his realizations on this point of becoming instruments in the hands of the Lord. And he was saying that actually we cannot serve the Lord. We don't have bhakti. It's not, I mean, it's deep inside of our heart, but most of the time it's not accessible for us. But he was saying when we become instrument, we allow this bhakti energy to manifest or to enter our heart, and then we are just giving this energy back to Krishna. It's like we are just the medium. We receive this spiritual energy and give it back to Krishna. And I remember once, I think 2 years ago, we had the Kirtan Melo in Radhadesh. And hundreds of devotees were there. The festival was starting. And Manu Prabhu asked me to lead the Kirtan, the Guru Puja Kirtan in the morning. And I was very anxious or very nervous to sing because so many devotees were there and many older devotees were there. So I was there with my kartals, Shiguru Charana. And after some time, I just remember that point of actually I have nothing to really do on my own. I just need to allow spiritual energy to come in me and to direct the spiritual energy toward Krishna. And while as the kirtan was going on, I was meditating on that. Actually, there is no weight on my shoulder. I'm anyway not able to do much. The only things that can make the kirtan successful is if I just become instrument, if I just allow this bhakti energy to come in me and redirect this energy to Hara Gopinath. And it was just a wonderful experience. It was very, all anxieties left, all nervousness left, and it just became blissful. It just became very light, very, very nice. And when we can give up this strong controlling attitude that we are in charge, that we have the responsibility to make it super perfect, excellent things, and we understand actually I just need to be a good medium, I just need to be a good instrument, then all anxieties are gone. Then the mind also becomes very peaceful. You can immediately connect in a deeper way to offering pleasure to Krishna. It's a magical switch of living in the hands of the Lord and just following his plan, following his desire, following his inspiration, following the ways of bhakti. Once the Mataji was asking her spiritual master in India. It was during the month of Kartik, and she was in Vrindavan, and she asked her spiritual master about making vratas, making vows during the month of Kartik. Usually during the month of Kartik, we all try to increase our rounds or some type of vows. And the spiritual master was saying, it's not so good to take vows when we are in Vrindavan. Because in Vrindavan, there is a certain flow of bhakti. There is a certain flow of loving devotion. And sometimes when you put vratas, you take some vows, you will sometimes refuse to be carried in this flow of bhakti because you are so much attached to fulfill your own vrata. And here again we see, I mean, there are always those two poles of our own endeavor and the mercy of the Lord, like we heard in the Damodar pastime yesterday. But it's important to never come in the way of what the Lord wants for us in the aim of progressing spiritually. Like also when Giriraj came to me, I had to ask my Guru Maharaj if I would be able to worship him. And my Guru Maharaj is not at all favorable that we take Giriraj Shila for worship. So I told him all the signs that came and everything that was. And he said, still ask other devotees, ask our Pujari in Krishna Balaramandir. And so I went and I asked, and the Pujari said, yeah, you start the worship, everything is fine. And so I called back my spiritual master to tell him the news. And my spiritual master said, yeah, how can I put myself in between Giriraj and you? If Giriraj decides to come to you, how can I put myself in between the plans of the Lord? If that's the plan of the Lord, so let it be. And I think it's very, very nice point in our life to try to see what are the plans of the Lord, to try to see what is coming toward us, what opportunity for service are coming toward us, and that actually we are not too attached to our own plan, even if there are plans for our own spiritual progress. Like we are chanting 16 rounds a day, and during those 16 rounds we are asking, I don't know how many times, but many, many times, please Krishna, engage me in your service. And sometimes services are coming toward us. Devotees are asking her for service, and we try to escape. And we say, oh no, I have some other service to do. And sometimes it's really the pressure of the mind, the strong attachment to what I'm planning to do. This is such a big attachment. We are all constantly planning, scheduling. Okay, now I do this, then I do that, then I will do this. And then this becomes very strongly inside of us, and it's very difficult to be flexible if Krishna has some other plan for us. I appreciate so much in my experience with my spiritual master, so many times I was trying to push him to give me answers, to give me, when do we go, where do we go, and all the time I was trying to, because of this strong tendency of controlling. And I could see that my Guru Maharaj so often will leave it open. Yeah, let's see, let's wait a little more, how we will do this, how we will do that. He was always leaving it open until really the need was there to take the decision, to see if some signs will come, if some other situation will appear that will maybe make the situation change and that the decision should be in another sense. I was speaking with the new servant of Guru Maharaj, Bhakta Sebastian, and for him he was saying it's a big struggle. If I know everything goes in the way I can organize myself, then everything is easy. But when I don't know, just last minute I know how to do, and then it becomes very difficult. And this shows how this attachment to our own plans, to our own concepts, to the way we want things to go, is very, very strongly rooted inside of us. And this is one of the impediments for us to become instruments in the hands of the Lord. You see, sometimes even small things, like after Mangala Arati, we start chanting Japa, and I remember in Zurich Temple, we had all our different ideas of how the light should be. So one will come and switch off the big and put a small, and after sometimes another will come and put another small and switch off the third one. And then this devotee will go out of the temple room to continue his round somewhere else, and another devotee will go and change it again. Everyone has his own understanding of how it will be good. And we see, in whatever happens, we all have different perspective, different vision, and we become attached to the way we would like things to go. And because of this attachment, we are actually not flexible enough to become instruments. We are not open enough to see what are the signs that Krishna is giving us and how to allow ourselves to be moved by the Lord and not just trying ourselves to move. We can see also in our own spiritual progress. My Guru Maharaj often said we are so much depending on our own endeavor. We are too much depending on our own endeavor. We don't leave the place for Krishna to carry us. And the progress depends really on Him. We can try so hard in our spiritual practice, but very often is when the mercy is there that significant step can be done in our life. So again, we can try to control, but obviously we always need to do our best effort. But this meditation of allowing ourselves to be moved by the Lord, to become instruments, and to detach ourselves from the push of the mind, who wants all the things to be perfectly in the way we want, this is a nice meditation, a nice meditation in Krishna consciousness. Also, we see sometimes we are called to take some leading positions in Krishna consciousness, and as more as actually we are staying and sticking to the process, as more as we might need to take responsibilities, and sometimes we need to be in the front. Sometimes we need to lead bhajan, for example, where you are in front, where you are, the whole bhajan is depending on you, on your quality of chanting, in your quality of consciousness. Sometimes one is asked to give lecture also where he's there and he needs to speak to others. And in those positions, when we are in the front position, it's so easy to become proud. It's so tricky to try to take actually the fruits for oneself. But when we do this simple effort of becoming instrument or this simple meditation, then we are actually protected from this pride. Some weeks ago I was in Switzerland. I was giving some lecture in Langenthal, and suddenly no inspiration. I mean, I had my notes. I had given those lectures maybe 10 times or 15 times. I knew very well the topic. I was just not able to present it in any good way. And I could see the whole atmosphere was scattered. The devotees were not hearing. They were all in their own world. And I was pushing. You know, I was speaking loud. I was looking at the devotees. I was really trying all the best that I could. But just nothing. Nothing was happening. And I felt Krishna has left me. I felt now Krishna let me alone to give my lecture. And there is no empowerment. There is no strength. I'm the only insignificant jiva trying to do something. I felt like Arjuna when Krishna had left the material world. And Arjuna was bringing the queen from Dvarka to Hastinapur. And he was attacked on the way by some bandits. And although he is such amazing fighter, he was defeated by those bandits on the road. And he was just thinking, what is happening? I have lost all my strengths. I have lost everything. And sometimes Krishna is doing purposefully that so that we become more humble. Because humility is very much an important factor to become instruments. As much as we are proud, as more difficult is it to become instruments. So the art is to allow, to tune ourselves and to allow this spiritual energy to manifest inside of our heart, to enter inside of our heart so that we can give it back to Krishna. And often my Guru Maharaj said, bhakti comes actually from bhaktas. Bhakti comes from the devotees of the Lord. They have bhakti in their heart, and by association with them, we receive this devotion. Remember once we were in Zagreb temple in Mangalarati, and they had to bring Tulsi, who was totally in the opposite place of the temple room. And somehow the devotees spaced it out in the morning, so they just noticed, oh, Tulsi is not there. So we were all waiting that the devotee bring Tulsi. And Sachinandana Swami was there, and he said, do you know that we are actually waiting for a pure devotee? That a pure devotee is now going to come here and bless us with Bhakti Devi, give us this Bhakti Devi. Also, we are chanting every day. I mean, not all, but very often we are chanting the prayer for Tulsi. How much are we begging for this devotion? How much are we begging for this bhakti to manifest in our heart? It's often we take it a little for granted, and we actually don't understand so much the necessity of receiving this bhakti. And that's the base, that's the ground of all our practices. Once I was in New Vrindavan, and Sachinandana Swami was staying in the same apartment than Radhanath Swami. And in the morning when they were all in the temple room chanting japa, I went in the apartment to do the puja of Radha Kanhailal. And after 15 minutes, 20 minutes, I was offering the lamp, the ghee lamp, to them. And suddenly Radhanath Swami entered in the apartment. And that was the same room in which I was doing the worship. And immediately I felt some bhakti entering my heart. I was, you know, just offering the lamp. And as he entered the room, I felt like, oh yeah, I'm actually offering that for Radha Kanhailal. Oh my Lord, this is for you. This is for your pleasure. The consciousness just switched just by his presence entering the room. And I don't know if he prayed or what happened, but it was really mystical how my consciousness changed just by having this person, Radhanath Swami, entering the same room. And we can see also when we are close to pure devotees, we generally become very humble, and we can see immediately how fallen we are. It's just make it so clear when we are next to such a person, and we can see their heart is full of this devotion, and we can receive that devotion if we are eager for it, if we are wanting to have this devotion. So I was speaking a little bit on this deep attachment of our own plans for things to go in some ways, so that actually we cannot be instruments. And often I like this point of leaving a space for seeing Krishna's signs. Leaving a space in our minds. Our minds are so busy thinking so many things. I remember once I was taking darshan. It was in Govardhan town, in the Haridev temple. And I was taking darshan, and I just noticed I was just constantly speaking in my mind. Oh my Lord, I would like this, I would like that, and then I will think of some other things. I will be standing physically in front of the deities, but my mind was just totally somewhere else, totally wandering. And then at a certain time I felt, no, stop. Now just hear. Pray to the deity and then just empty your mind and just hear if some voice come. So I just tried, and when I was silent, when I met the empty mind, I started to hear birds were chirping very nicely around. And I noticed I was suddenly able to enter deeper into Vrindavan atmosphere than what I was when I was so busy with all my mind. And sometimes I like also to do that with Prabhupada when I go, especially in Zurich temple, we have beautiful Prabhupada room, to go and pray to Prabhupada and then to hear from him, to ask him some guidance, and then to just empty the mind and just be ready to receive whatever signs are coming. So many times we are so full of ourselves that we are actually, there is no space for anything from the spiritual dimension to come to us. Therefore, for example, when we chant japa, the whole art is to neglect the mind, to make our mind empty, so that we can actually receive Krishna consciousness, we can receive the holy name, we can receive advice, guidance in our life. As much as we try to control, as far we are from Krishna consciousness. I have another example that was very, very nice. I would like to share. Last year we were in Govindakund with Sachinandana Swami, who was doing his vrata. And every day we will go from Govindakund to Apsarakund, down to the tail of Govardhan. We will chant some rounds there, and then when the night will be there, we will come back on the road by feet. Wow, that was so beautiful. When the night was coming and you walk the Parikram path down close to the tail, it's just such a mystical atmosphere. I remember once we met a Baba who is doing Parikram even an ISKCON devotee is making Parikram, is doing even 2 Parikram a day. He's quite fired up for Govardhan Parikram. So we met him and he gave us 2 giwiks each to offer to Govardhan. You know, Kartik, we offer a lot of lamps. Maharaj said, no, 1 giwik is enough, 1 giwik is enough. And then I said, no, Yugal worship, Radha and Krishna. So we offer the lamps, and then we bade farewell from the sadhu and continued walking. And then Maharaj stopped and looked around. And there was still the lamp shining in the darkness, and you could see the reflection on Govardhan Hill. We were very close to the hill. It looked so beautiful. And Maharaj said, look, we did something good today. We did something good. Look, the small worship that we have done is now lighting our life, which is usually in the darkness of the ignorance. These two lamps, this small attempt of serving the Lord, is now shining into the darkness of our ignorant life. It's very, wow, I have such beautiful remembrance of those evenings. Anyway, I come back to what I wanted to say in the story. We went to Apsarakund, and every day the guts of the kund were very dirty. And coming from Switzerland, I would every day feel, oh, it's not good, maybe I should wash them. But every day I was thinking, no, I have my vrata, now my service is to chant, nothing else, let's just sit and chant. And one day we arrived there and Gumar said, why don't you clean the gut today? And I said, okay, today it's the sign, I should do it. So I left my japa and spent half an hour cleaning very nicely all the gats. And then I went the other side of the kund and sat and continued chanting my japa. And then again night came. And what happened, it was Diwali day. It was the day before Govardhan Puja. And the bridge basi started to come to the kund with some trails and some light. And they started to offer light to the kund, light to Giri Govardhan, and then they were lighting all the ghats. They would put all those lamps on the ghats. And I was just amazed. The day where they came to do the puja, on that day, I had, by the help of my Gumaj, I had cleaned all the ghats. And I felt so happy to see that they could do their worship in such a clean place. And then I felt, through the medium of my Gumaj, I was totally engaged on the proper time, the proper day, to do the proper service for the bridge basis. And those moments are very mystical, those moments when we can be properly in tune into the hands of the Lord, then it's really, we get a lot of happiness, we get a lot of connection into our spiritual life. So the point of the lecture today is, try to become a little more sensitive, a little more flexible into our plans, into the way we are trying to lord it over our life, and to give more space for Krishna to enter and guide our steps the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas, to hear from them, to be always open, to always ready to change the things according to how we wanted to do them. I think it's very nice inspiration. That's interesting also to see how Prabhupada writes in the purport that Krishna is the controller of both the material and the spiritual energy. And I remember Ramakanta Prabhu was giving the lecture in Zurich Temple one evening and was saying again this point that Krishna is the supreme controller. And then I say, but how is it that sometimes Krishna becomes controlled by love, by the love of his devotee? Is he really still the supreme controller? And then he said, yeah, he's still the supreme controller because he'll allow himself to be controlled by the love of his devotees. And we heard yesterday this beautiful pastimes of Damodar Lila, where we hear very much how Krishna allows himself to be bound by the love of Mother Yasoda. But I would like to mention another pastime where Krishna was allowing himself to be controlled by the love of his devotees. Just move a little. Oh, actually, it's okay. Yeah, it's okay. Jai Shishi Gonitai Ki Jai. So these pastimes happened when Krishna was entering Mathura. After Krishna had killed the washerman and received all his clothes, there were some tailors who made the clothes exactly the proper size for Krishna and Balaram, because the king was obviously bigger, so all the clothes were too long. So they found some tailors who were just adjusting the clothes of all the cowherd boys. And somehow they knew that the cowherd boys might have to do some fighting experience, so therefore they made also the clothes a very good size and very large so that they could move easily around. Then Krishna got the garland from Sudam. And after that there was the meeting with Kubja, he received the sandalwood paste. And then he went to break the ark, the bow of Kamsa. And Krishna was very joyful, very playful. He was walking in the roads of Mathura, and he was asking everyone, where is the bow? Where is the bow? And the people will direct him. And even when he was very close to the bow, he will just for fun ask the devotees, where is the bow? Where is the bow of Kamsa? And then when he came there, there were many guards guarding the bow, and there was some type of fence. And Krishna just walked toward them, just went through the fence, just took the bow and just break it. They just could not even imagine that this small boy could do anything wrong. They were just looking at this boy and he just broke the bow. So after that, they all started to try to kill him. They just, all the guards attacked him very seriously, that Krishna did not have any other option than to kill them first so that he will not be endangered. So all those guards were killed, and in the evening they went back to a garden where they had their camp. That was a garden in the outskirts of Mathura, just at the, and there was Nanda Maharaj and all the cowherd boy, and there they took their first meal of the day. It is even said that Yasoda Mai had, when they left Vrindavan, she put a stove on the chariot with some sweet rice that was slowly cooking for many hours. And because they did not want to accept any food from the Mathura Vasis, when they, after all this hectic day, they came back to this camp and they took this kheer that Mother Yasoda had started in the morning. And then they went to bed. They slept under some carts and they were very happy to sleep like this outside, and they slept very comfortably, Krishna, Balaram, the cowherd boys. But Nanda Maharaj was very anxious. He was thinking, oh my God, Krishna has broke that bow. And he was thinking, actually, it's not Krishna who broke that bow. It's Narayan. Narayan entered the body of Krishna and he broke the bow. And now everyone will think, that's my Krishna who broke the bow. And they will all come to try to make him some troubles. So Nanda Maharaj was very, very much in anxiety. But Krishna and Balaram were very peaceful, sleeping under the cart. Now in the next morning, Krishna and Balaram told Nanda Maharaj, you go to the arena of Kamsa and you guard some place, some sitting place for us. We will go and take our bath in the Yamuna. So the boys went to play there, and in the meantime all decoration for the big wrestling match were done in this big arena. People started to fill up this arena, beautiful decorations were there, and then the musicians started to play sound, but very strong rhythmic music, like enthusing for war, enthusing for combat. And Krishna and Balaram were at the side of the Yamuna, taking their baths and playing with the other boys, and when they heard the sounds of the music, they became grave and they say, okay, now it's our time. Now let's go and take darshan of King Kamsa. So they went on the way. Actually, Krishna had sent Nanda Maharaj earlier in the arena because he knew that Kuvalayapit would be on the way. And he knew that Nanda Maharaj would not be able to tolerate to see the fight with Kuvalayapit. So he sent Nanda Maharaj earlier, then there was the fight with Kuvalayapit, and then they entered the arena. And they did not just enter the arena and sat on the side. They just entered the arena and just started to walk in the middle of the arena with the tusks of Kuvalayapit on the shoulder, and they looked so attractive, so beautiful, and that everyone could see them in different ways. Chanura and Mustika, they saw him as dead personified. And then Chanura and Mustika made sign, come for the fight. They were showing their muscles, they were banging their legs like this, like ready for the fight. And Krishna and Balaram said, no, we are not going to fight with you. We are small boys. What we can do against such big wrestler like you? But Chanura and Mustika said, no. What did you do to Kuvalayapit? We know you have special power. Now you have to fight. So they started the fight. And as they were fighting, everyone in the arena understood that's not a normal fight. They are trying to kill Krishna and Balaram. So everyone became frightened. They started to scream in the arena, stop this fight, stop this fight. It's not just it. They are small boys. It's Adama, stop this fight. And Krishna and Balaram were giving their best in the fight, and finally they liberated those Chanura and Mustika. They killed them. And there were many other wrestlers that were supposed to come and fight, but when they saw what happened with Chanura and Mustika, they all took the exit door and did not even try. Now, at that time, Krishna and Balaram said, we are here to please the king. The king wanted some nice wrestling match. So Krishna and Balaram called all the cowboy down in the arena and said to the cowboy, let's make some good wrestling match to please King Kamsa. That was obviously ironic, but they called the cowboy, and some of the cowboy were a little shy to come down. And so Krishna and Balaram went up and took them down, and they started to wrestle. And they started to wrestle so beautifully. It was not anymore a fight to kill the opponent, but it was done with love and devotion. It was a loving fight. It was so beautiful. Everyone was just amazed by the beauty of the fight. And it was so beautiful that the music band of Kamsa started to play very joyous rhythmic. And Kamsa was becoming angry. Who asked you to play? Who asked you to play? And he was started to curse. And even the minister were applauding. All the associates of Kamsa were in jubilant. And Kamsa was trying to tell them, stop. But nobody could hear Kamsa anymore. He was already dead. And at that time, what happened is that the cowboys were winning over Krishna in the fight. Krishna and Balaram were on the ground with their bowed shoulder, plucked at the ground, and the boys had their feet on the chest of Krishna and Balaram and the hand, and were showing, we did defeat the Lord. So the Lord was just now killing this big Chanuha and Mustika, but then he was defeated by the Kaur boys' fight. He was actually defeated by Lord, by the love of his devotees, by the love of the Kaur boy. And this is this beautiful point of Krishna allowing himself to become under the control of his loving devotees. So that was a little pastime part of the lecture. So I don't know if you have questions or comments. I heard it from Radha Govinda Swami. He's a very, very advanced soul. He's Indian body. He's not giving much lecture in English, but there are transcriptions of his lecture. And he's giving a lot of Bhagavad Saptaha, 8 days of lecture on Srimad Bhagavatam. And for example, the Leela of Krishna entering Mathura is done in 8 or 9 lectures of 2 hours. So it's 18 hours of lecture just on these pastimes of Krishna entering Mathura. So he's going in many details, many commentaries of acharyas. And I guess because he is Hindi speaking, he's getting maybe some other shastra that are not translated for us. But yeah, brilliant kata. Yeah. Good. So let's try to meditate a little on this point of becoming instruments, of being more flexible in our plan, in our decisions, and try to see more what are the signs of Krishna, what are the devotees around me asking me, what is my Guru Maharaj would like me to do, or how can I please my Guru Maharaj, and be a little more in tune with the plans of the Lord and not be lost into our small world of controlling everything and yeah, like this. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai.